A conversation with American composer and Maine native Aaron Robinson. Aaron Robinson is a composer and conductor. He's performed on and off Broadway, and he has written for television, film, and theater. Many of his classical works have been performed throughout the world, and his latest project, a book titled Does God Sing? A Musical Journey, is hitting bookstores and online stores nationwide this month. I'm Suzanne Nance, in today for Keith Shortall. Join me as I sit down with Aaron Robinson at the keyboard to talk about his career, the power of music in any genre, and his latest projects. Take part in our conversation. Email talk at mpbn.net. Tweet at MaineCalling. Post a comment to our Facebook page or give us a call. 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Music and the soul. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by LA Arts, presenting Out of My Hands, Christopher O'Reilly, live at the Franco-American Heritage Center in Lewiston, January 26th. Tickets at laarts.org. And by Cross Jewelers, offering more than 2,000 ways to show your love. Upstairs in downtown Portland and online at crossjewelers.com.
And welcome to Maine Calling. Again, I'm Suzanne Nance, sitting in for Keith Shortall, and our guest this morning is Aaron Robinson. Welcome to the studio. Great to have you.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's so wonderful to be here. We're both smiling because it's taken us 3 years to come together.
It's taken us a long time, Aaron. I don't know how it's happened. And with full disclosure, I asked you to write the Maine Arts theme last year. We kicked off a new series about all of the wonderful happenings here in Maine, and I called you up. It's amazing we didn't meet then, but I called you up, and within a matter of hours, you had composed a theme for us, and it was the most amazing experience to work with you. You were so efficient and so creative and so wonderful to work with. So I came away from that opportunity with just a wonderful feeling about you and respect for your work. So it's great to have you live and in person and meet you.
Great. Well, the feeling is mutual. I mean, we have NPR in our house on 24 hours a day, for, you know, even when we're not there, you know, the plants and the dogs and everything, but the calming effect of your voice. And I've told you for years that this might not even be about my book. It just might be about you.
No.
I've told you for years that I can hear you smiling on the radio when you talk. That's amazing to be able to just, you know, let that go and be heard across the air.
Well, thank you. We are going to get to your book.
Okay.
We want to hear about your career and your latest projects, including this book titled Does God Sing? A Musical Journey. And as I've just been informed, it actually hits bookstores and online stores nationwide today.
Today.
So congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, it's an 18-month process.
Let's back up before we find out about this latest project and find out a little bit more about you. How did you get your start in music, Aaron?
Well, you know, with all the musical hats that I've worn over the years, being a pianist, an accompanist, a conductor, a composer, a music historian, a lecturer, you would think that many child prodigies would just, you know, fall out of the womb and say, "Where's the keyboard?" That didn't happen with me. I didn't start until I was in high school, and I never had a piano teacher. I taught myself. And so the music actually spoke to me. And everyone asks, do you teach music? And I say, you really can't teach music. You know, if you have a love for it, it finds you. So all through my life, I have never had to work for something. I mean, I've worked at my talent and my craft. But it seems that, you know, if the door is open and you keep the channel open, it all just finds you. So within a year of actually touching the piano, I was already playing Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue for statesmen and governors and all over. And it just went so quickly. And, you know, the next thing, of course, is where you're going to school, because I was right at the brink of the old school that said you're not going to get anywhere unless you have a degree. And then, you know, after the 1990s, it was more, well, you got a degree, but what can you bring to the table?
Right.
So I just said, you know what, I'm going to get out there and do it. And I haven't stopped once, and it's been wonderful.
Did you have musical parents?
Well, I'm going to really say no. They're listening. But my dad, of course, you know, played guitar, but he came from a generation where that was entertainment in the home, to either play the piano or play the guitar. He didn't read music or anything, but, you know, being brought up in the church, We had a lot of music. Mm-hmm. Now, the first time I ever heard classical music or anything was on, you know, an audio cassette back in the 80s. So nothing was really taught to me, and I was voracious in my reading and my listening, and that was quite my library. But no, being in the backwoods of Maine, there was nothing. There was nothing. So,
well, first of all, hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Right.
Glad you're with us. So you get to college, and you were self-taught. Did you find benefits to having been self-taught, or did you feel like you were lacking because others had had, you know, years and years of, you know, formal training in music?
Right. Well, I can remember my first composition classes with my professors, Sir Lawrence, Thomas Bell, and John Adams, and I can clearly... The first day, I kept bringing up pieces that I had heard, and they kept saying, I've never heard those pieces. Things like the Overture to Candide. Huh. And I said, well, wait a minute. You've got everything. You're here at a conservatory. You're a professor. You're a doctor. How is it that you haven't heard this? And it kind of put things into perspective. And I don't mean to downplay their role in my life, but it kind of boosted my understanding that what I had brought already to that area was just a thirst.
Yeah.
So not only was I at the Boston Conservatory learning musical theater, classical composition, but I was also moonlighting at Berkeley doing film score.
That's amazing.
So anything that, you know, came my way, I just said, okay, let's do it.
You've talked a lot, both publicly and in your new book, about having gospel and ragtime really resonate with you, maybe more so than other genres of music. Some might find that odd given your background and upbringing. So do you have a favorite genre? Is it gospel? Is it ragtime? And do you have a least favorite?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good question, as she sits back and says, take that. Right. That's very difficult because, you know, honestly, at this stage in my life, I had saturated myself with piano literature, symphonic literature, choral, orchestral, Broadway, all of that. There's so little that I have left to hear, you know, and to learn from. So why that specific genre clicked with me. And, you know, I do get bored with ragtime. You know, there were many years that I kind of turned my back on it because people, that's all they wanted to hear. And in my book, you can tell, you know, there are times when I've slipped in certain pieces that identified with me in concerts that I wanted to have done. But how a skinny white boy from Maine in the backwoods ever, you know, was influenced by gospel or black nativity or, you know, ragtime or Jelly Roll Morton or any of that, I have no idea. There are certain things that speak to a person and to a body. And, you know, I try to discuss it a little bit. I don't think it's just mental. I also think it's emotional, but even more so, I think it's physical. I think there is something that just makes your body just come alive when you hear certain chords. When you hear someone else singing gospel, and I don't mean the gospel of today where it's very much performer rather than performance. They're all over the place singing the Star Spangled Banner or Silent Night. Right. But when you hear a whole chorus just singing those call and responses back and forth, oh my gosh, there's nothing like it in the world. And I think that's what it comes down to for me.
We do have Aaron Robinson at the keyboard. And Aaron, feel free whenever you'd like to give us a little taste of something or bring us into the world you're mentioning, please feel free to play for us. I'll take that anytime you're playing and off the cuff. I'd like to invite folks to call in if they have a question or comment about your career or about music and the power of music. The number to call is 1-800-399-3566. Perhaps there's an experience you'd like to share. 1-800-399-3566. You can post to our Facebook page. You can email talk@mpbn.net. You can also tweet at Maine Calling. Now, you could have written a book about anything. When you came in just a few moments ago, we were talking about three chords and composers and their use of those chords. It seems to me like you could really write on any topic. You chose to focus on the music that we hear and opening ourselves up to it. You've titled your book, Does God Sing? A Musical Journey. Tell us about the book and tell us about your musical journey.
Right. Well, the book started out very large. It had 27 chapters. And because, as I said earlier, I have worn so many musical hats, not just in one area. I wasn't just a choral composer or a choral conductor. I wasn't just an accompanist or an orchestral organist or a pianist. The list goes on. I was all those things. I'm sorry. I was all those things.
That you were not just those things.
Just those things. At one particular thing. That I came across, lessons along the lines of actually producing the music, performing the music. And the common thread that's through this book, and I think the title will probably throw people, Does God Sing? Well, first of all, is that a religious book? It's not. The reason why I labeled it that is because I believe we have a lot of lessons to learn. There were times in my career when I just didn't have time for some of the people coming to me and saying, I really want to share this. I want to sing this. I want to do this. You know, even in prestigious churches that I was very high up in, you know, and being paid a lot of money to, I just couldn't have some congregation member come up and say, you know, I want to sing next Sunday. It just didn't happen. And yet the most profound experiences came out of letting go, forgetting what society was about, and really letting that happen. So the musical common thread that runs through all of this starts with, of course, me being very young. And where do you start? You can only do two places, church and theater. And I've done both. A lot of therapy, but I've done both, church and theater. So it starts out being very young and learning what to do, what to expect, or what have people expect of me. And then it branched out into other things. It talks about, the book talks about medicinal healing. The incredible story about a young girl and her father in a hospital room, where not only did the music that he lived with all his life bring his body back to life for just a moment, but then at the end of it, when she knew it was over, it gave him release. Just absolutely beautiful. Then there are other points where you're at the lowest of the low in your life and you think, I've lost my job, I've lost my family, I don't know what I'm going to do. And all of a sudden a piece of music comes on the radio and it totally speaks to you. And of course, I would love to talk about this story. The gentleman who had lost a relative in a car accident, he did not want to go to work. He didn't want to get out of bed. He didn't even want to live life anymore. And when he went to work, he had on Maine Public Radio. And what was on it was Copeland's Appalachian Spring. I know that's a favorite of yours.
It is.
Yes. And he said, I got lost in that music. It was just tones. It was just peaceful. And it spoke to me, and it gave me enough courage and strength to get up and face what had happened in my life. A year later, he was supposed to meet with the family of that relative. And he came to Portland, and he did not know how he was going to face them. He was going through a really rough time. And the church that he was going to go to was sharing service with our church at the time. It was Emmanuel Baptist Church. But they were sharing a service with us, and he was reluctant to go, but he did. And he sat down, and what was on the program, but I had programmed an orchestral arrangement for the organ of Appalachian Spring.
Wow.
So he sat there and he went, okay, I understand now. And by the time those final chords came crashing down, because I had an orchestral organ, so I had timpanis and I had everything, I just let it all go. He just envisioned God stomping through that sanctuary, and it got him through again. So, you know, I think if you go looking for it, I don't know if you're going to find it, but in the quietest moments, in the most saddened moments of your life, distraught, sometimes music can just hit you like nothing else, nothing else.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I have read your entire book. And what I found is I think that this book will resonate with people, whether they are religious or not, because somehow music creeps into our soul and our atmosphere and does allow us to engage in a way that maybe words sometimes do not allow us to.
Right.
Pretty amazing. Well, we need to take a short break. Will you play something as we go out to the break, Aaron?
Oh, sure.
Anything that comes to mind?
It comes to mind. That left me years ago.
And to fingers.
Yeah. That's right. Thank you.
next Fresh Air, on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, we talk with Carolyn Jones about dealing with Texas's mandatory sonogram law when she had her abortion. She's since written a series in the Texas Observer about new restrictions on abortion in Texas. And we'll hear from Carolyn Klein, the CEO of Involved for Life in Dallas, which offers alternatives to abortion. Join us.
That's this evening at 7 o'clock here on MPBN Radio. As you know, many businesses and organizations in and around Maine join listeners in supporting various public radio programs on the MPBN radio service. To learn how your business can benefit from supporting MPBN, either on MPBN radio or on MPBN television, please visit our website, mpbn.net. Click on Business Support to find information about the value of sponsorship, answers to frequently asked questions, and contact information. Or you can call us at 1-800-884-1717 and ask for Susan Tran. And of course, thank you for your support of public broadcasting here in Maine. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Sweetser, serving mental and behavioral health needs of children, adults, and families in Maine since 1828. Sweetser.org. And by Maine Farmland Trust, member-supported and working hard to secure a future for farming in Maine, on the web at mainefarmlandtrust.org.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Suzanne Nansen today for Keith Schoedahl. Today on the program, Aaron Robinson, on the program and at the keyboard. He's a composer and conductor and the author of a new book, Does God Sing a Musical Journey? Aaron Robinson writes toward the end of the book, quote, "Music surrounds us, even in the simplest and most natural of places. You just have to be open to hearing it." And then he quoted Katharine Hepburn's family motto, "Listen to the song of life." Does that sum up the book, even though it really can't be summed up in that little bit of a nutshell? But is that really the main point, listen to the song of life?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I was just asked that the other day. If you could sum up the book in one sentence, that would be it.
Hmm.
That would be it. Because my musical journey, you can tell, I had a 16-year-old boy at the beginning, and then, of course, an accomplished musician at the end. What had I learned in the middle of it? And it brought me back. Ooh, for many years, I did not do nature.
I read that when you said I grew up in this man. Here's this, you know, I'm breathing in this amazing summer air, and I'm in the fresh cut lawn and the hills, and then you said I do not do nature.
Yeah, I was like Chopin. I never left the house. I just coughed into a rag, and so, but as I grew, of course, you know, you had to appreciate things. You know, when I first started listening to music, it was the big ones. It was the Russians, you know, the instantaneous bang, and I'm going to hit you. And I couldn't get into Bach. I couldn't get into Brahms.
Is that right?
Yes. And then as I grew to better appreciate it, you know, you had to come in the front door to reach the back. And now Brahms is so celestial to me, and Mahler, and all of these wonderful pieces that were really, all of them, Grieg, Beethoven, they all found solace in nature. And so when I was reading a lot of the pieces of Bernstein in the Harvard lectures or whatever, it always returned to the beauty of nature. And so that kind of opened up a question as to, well, what is music? And then I realized that music isn't just something you listen to on a CD or the radio. It's not a tempered, you know, instrument. You can find music in everywhere. We're enveloped by music. I mean, we sing when we speak. The only thing that cuts us off are our consonants. But to go out and listen to the song of life, you know, Gershwin wrote Rhapsody in Blue on a train, and Ferdy Grofe wrote the Grand Canyon Suite just at sunset when it came up. Beethoven wrote a wonderful piano sonata listening to the horse gallop, which of course goes like this. can just envision him watching out the window, this horse, you know, galloping by. So listening to the song of life in more ways than one, the song of life meaning nature, but also the song of life with the people who come into your life. And if you don't really appreciate what's going on in the moment, if you're too busy for it, then you might miss out.
This is Maine Calling. You can call in with your question or comment. Perhaps music has touched your life in a special way. You can call this number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, it's 1-800-399-3566. You can also post to our Facebook page, or you can tweet at Maine Calling. Aaron, you were talking earlier about some of the stories in your book, and for me, that was, I mean, I couldn't put it down because I read about the solo of Ruthie Brown and some of these people who experienced the most, a sparrow flying in the window and hitting them in the chest. You know, this man thought he was having some kind of heart attack or stroke, and, you know, taking these as signs. And I thought about the day I have no idea why, and I know you have a million stories like this. I wanted to play the theme from Star Wars. And I'm thinking, oh, gosh, you know, is that too much? Is it, you know, is it just ridiculous for a Tuesday morning, you know? And for whatever reason, I played it. And I received a letter in the mail a few weeks later from a boy who said that he was actually going to take his life that morning. And for whatever reason, he turned on the radio and his mother had left MPBN on and heard the theme to Star Wars and decided that he could find the strength to go on. And went and got therapy and was doing quite well. So who knows why these things happen?
Oh, but, I just got chills listening to that story.
But there are so many stories in your book that resonated with me in that way. Let's take a call. We have a caller from Peaks Island. This is Annie. Hi, Annie. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Thanks so much. I'm fascinated listening to the program. I first met you, Aaron, when you did that community education course on song interpretation, and I was reminded of it when you were talking about inviting anyone to come forward with a song, and this is discoveries that are made. And also, you were just speaking now about all the different hats you've worn, and I found in working with you that the idea that a composer creates every note, every rest, every count, every beat in a song with a specific emotional idea. And if you allow yourself, as a singer, I was totally fascinated by that, and I felt like my attention had not been drawn to it in that way before. And I've never forgotten it, and it's really enriched my exploration of song. So I wonder if you could talk more about the expressive power of music from a composer's perspective.
Hi, Annie. It's so great to hear from you. You sang Just a Housewife, didn't you?
I sang, let me see, did I do, I can't even remember.
It was Just a Housewife. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Oh, it's wonderful to hear from you. Well, as a composer, you know, a composer, there are two lives to a composer. It's probably one of the loneliest lives of an artist, because as a singer, as an instrumentalist, as even a conductor, you have some sort of outlet so that you can be not rewarded, but at least validated in what you do. But a composer sits by himself and writes what comes out of what's inside. Now, an artist can paint a picture and put it on a wall and it can be seen forever. But someone like Franz Schubert, Schubert never heard his music performed, ever. And he wrote just some of the greatest music we know today. Why did he do it? That's the question I'll always ask. Why did this man sit in a little house, little tiny room with no piano, and why did he pen the notes that came out, of who he was? I think that he had no choice. I think he had no choice. He was open to that channel, and even though it was a lonely life, if you get the opportunity to touch someone's life through music, that's the greatest gift of all. Everybody always says, "Oh, you must go home and play the piano all the time." I actually don't have a piano in my home because What I would like to do is leave something for the world. You know, Joplin and Mahler both said, I really won't be appreciated until 50 years after I'm dead. And I wonder, it doesn't matter what I perform or compose in my studio, if someone hears it 50 years after I'm gone, I think that's the connection that I make with trying to get something out.
Thank you so much, Annie. Thank you. And from Facebook, Kim posted this. Thank you for having Aaron on Main Calling. He has such incredible talent. I have two sick little girls who are home listening to him on the radio. I'm sure many can relate with the flu and cold season in high gear. He was their musical director for a few youth theater productions at the Waldo Theater in the past year or two. They absolutely love him. Wonderful to have local Maine talent featured. And Steve said the same thing. He remembers you in your teens from Waldo Theater Productions. So I'm curious, how did you take experiences from Waldo Theater to Broadway?
Oh, well, that's because I brought Broadway to the Waldo Theater. Back in the 90s, I was extremely lucky to have a production team that said, whatever you do, we'll follow. And it is incredible to think, but we were doing community-level productions at Broadway quality because we were bringing in people like Arthur Hall, who had worked with Alan Ailey and everything. And we were doing budgets of $20,000 for just a tiny little theater. And so what we taught the kids was the highest possible, you know, level of quality, and they rose to it every single time. So it wasn't that I brought anything to Broadway. It was that I brought Broadway to them. However, that being said, I enjoy working with children so much, almost more than adults. First of all, no matter what you say to them, they come back with a smile. They don't hold grudges and they don't quit. Not to say that adults do, but
right.
A lot of adult choirs.
A little more open-minded, maybe, right. In some instances.
Right. And they are sponges. And I hope we have an opportunity to go into Black Nativity, because what I learned with those children was that music is universal, and that the music that I enjoyed, if it was taught correctly, and I love to lecture, I love to perform lectures and whatnot, if you can sit down with someone and actually show them what this music is about and why it's so wonderful, they'll rise to it every time. And so with these children, it didn't matter. They did not have to live the lives of the characters that they were performing. But if you explained it in a way that they understood, boy, it was wonderful. And I found that that was the same way, you know, on Broadway or in any theater. Yeah.
1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566, if you like to share. Here on Main Calling, our guest is Aaron Robinson. You mentioned Black Nativity. Let's listen to an excerpt from Black Nativity and talk about this project.
Great.
An excerpt from Black Nativity. Tell us about this show, Aaron, and this project.
Black Nativity. Well, you know, I had already devoted a lot of the years in the 1990s finding a venue for all the music that I had grown up listening to and enjoying. Ragtime, Treemonisha, Joplin's magnificent opera. If you ever have a moment, play a real slow drag, the end of that. Find the Gunther Schuller, and people will just love it.
Wow.
You know, it's a wonderful piece. Big River, which is a, you know, steeped in cultural heritage that is not mine. And one Christmas, Dr. Tony Antolini, great man, you know, you've worked with him.
Absolutely.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Had given me an album called Black Nativity. I never heard of it. No one has ever heard of it, because it was just a gospel song play that Langston Hughes wrote back in 1961. had 50 performances, and then it kind of died. But on it was this marvelous music that there was no score to it. They were just singing. They were just performing, a B3 and a piano and six gospel singers. And, you know, by the end of it, I was just listening to that on the record. I was on my feet, and I said, how am I going to bring this to the world? And I realized that things like Treemonisha, works like Black Nativity, they do not have a barrier that separates them from race, creed, or color. It is all the same. If you have a love for the Gospels and to sing, you can perform Black Nativity. And so finally it's been picked up for publication. And ironically, it's come full circle, and Tony will be premiering it this Christmas.
Is that right?
Yes, with the Down East and the Bowdoin Chorus. So it's wonderful to think that this music that has been lying low with a kind of stigmatism as to who can perform it will now be performed by everyone. Because there's nothing in the Christmas Gospel spirituals that actually has to do with the Negro spirituals. It has to do with the Gospel.
We're going to take another short break. Chad and Marcia, we're going to the phones when we come back, and we'll hear more of your comments and questions. Please do stay with us.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, we'll look at President Obama's inaugural address and the second term ahead. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point tonight at 11 o'clock here on NPBN Radio.
One speech down, the State of the Union address looms. How will the president tackle the big issues of the second term?
The crisis in K-12 education. This is the civil rights issue of our day.
Now at Stanford, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says we're back to educational inequality in America. That's next time on The Takeaway from Public Radio International.
Join us for The Takeaway coming up tonight at midnight here on NPBN Radio. And at 1 o'clock after Main Calling, It's Your World, Susan Glasser, editor-in-chief of Foreign Policy Magazine, discusses what she expects will be on the U.S. foreign policy agenda in 2013.
And welcome back. I'm Suzanne Nance, in today for Keith Shortall. You're listening to Main Calling, and today on the program, The Power of Music. With me in the studio and at the keyboard, Aaron Robinson. He's a Maine native and the author of a new book that hit bookstores and online stores nationwide today, Does God Sing a Musical Journey? Let's go right to the phones. Chad from Hallowell is very glad to hear you, Aaron, on the radio today. It sounds like he's a fellow musician and composer. Hi, Chad. Hi, Chad.
Taking my call. And absolutely. I am a musician, and I'm just so excited to hear Aaron today because I feel like that there are some parallels between his life and mine, except for the success part. I guess he had some formal education, Aaron, but I've largely learned on my own. I don't say I'm self-taught, but I self-study. And I'm just now at the age of 59 learning how to play piano and organ. I'm kind of a geezer prodigy. But I wanted to ask if I could just, like, hang out with you for about a half a day and pick your brain.
Sure.
You know, and just jam some stuff. I'm at a place now where, my life mostly I have not been able to, or I haven't any pursued music professionally. I am now, and I guess a question I'd have for you is, how could I either find or make opportunities to direct, to compose, to, you know, get out there here locally in Maine, which is not so easy as it is in New York City.
Right. Well, I did a lot of what I'm known for right here in Maine. So I'm not going to say, oh, hang in there, it'll happen. I will tell you one thing is that you had mentioned earlier successes, and I coined a phrase a long time ago because when I used to go to parties, everybody would say, where did you study? Who did you study with? And I would say, you know what? That does not interest me. What interests me is what I can bring to the table now. So I'm going to tell you, success is not happiness, but happiness is success. If you are happy with what you're doing, you will be successful. And it doesn't need to be in the public eye. But we are living in an age where studios and all of those things that used to make a musician are going by the wayside. You can very much get on a computer on GarageBand or Finale. You can write your own music. Then you can put it on Amazon free of charge. You can make your own CDs and have them put out there through TuneCore or Crybaby, or any of those. You can share your music now as cheaply as possible with the world in any form. I think that is marvelous. So I would say to you, don't look for the conventional ways of doing it, getting in the concert hall, getting an audience, but reach for the people who you don't know and get it out there as best you can.
Thanks, Chad. Happiness is success. I love that, Aaron. I love it. Let's go to Marcia. Looks like she just wants to check in and say hi. Hi, Marcia.
Hi, Suzanne.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh, I think you're wonderful all by yourself.
Well, thanks. Thanks.
And I would love to see Aaron.
Yeah, well, I think you're not alone. So thanks for calling in,
no problem.
We're just going to keep on chatting away here, Marcia.
Okay.
It's wonderful to have Aaron Robinson. Have you worked with Aaron Robinson?
Yes, I did. Many years ago, Camden Civic Theater, I can't remember which two shows we did. I think one of them was Chicago. I played Mary Sunshine.
And Marcia.
Aaron and I, we had a whale of a good time. And so
we
if I could
did.
Speak to him. Are you there?
I am. You know, oh, Marcia.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. I remember you like it was yesterday. And how we never got arrested, I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll save that for another show.
Right.
Yeah, I just happened to catch you, and I thought, wow, am I proud of this boy, or am I what, you know?
Thank you very much.
And I am going to go look for your book, because you're absolutely right. Music
great.
Changes everything, I think. And as I say, I'm just extraordinarily proud to call you my friend.
Oh, thank you, dear.
Beautiful call. Thank you, Marcia.
If you ever want to talk when you're not busy, I'm in the phone book under M. Collar, and I'm still in Belfast, so you call me if you want to.
Great.
And it'd be great to see you again.
All right.
You take care, and the best to you too, Suzanne.
Thank you, Marcia. Let's go to Elizabeth. It sounds like she was touched by you're talking about bringing music to children. So, Elizabeth, welcome to Maine Calling. Elizabeth, are you there?
I am.
Hi, welcome to Maine Calling. Sounded like you wanted to talk about music being available to children.
Yes, yes, and how when you make it available, like you who compose and you who put it on the radio, you never know who it's going to touch. And when my son was an infant, he was so sensitive to everything. He was sensitive to touch and sound, and so we could have no rock and roll in the house. Like it would just stimulate him too much. And when I would sit and nurse him, I would always sit down and public radio. I was in Denver, and public radio classical music would be on, and it would suit him so much. And then as a toddler and older kid, every day at nap time, it would be classical music that would be on. And as an adult, when he got into his 20s, my mother, who used to play violin for the Portland Symphony Orchestra, she was old, and she and some of her little old lady friends had season subscriptions to go into the symphony, and they got so they couldn't drive. So here's my 22-year-old taking his grandmother and three little old ladies to the symphony. And eventually they died off, and he was left taking my mother for a couple of years. And one day I said to him, do you really enjoy the classical music? And he said, of course. And I said, why of course? And he says, I grew up with it. I was raised on it.
Yeah.
And it hadn't occurred to me. I mean, I had played it because everything else with his ADHD was pinging off the walls. But to him, he grew up with it. It was in his blood. And he then played it out by enjoying the symphony with his mom, with his grandmom for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years before she died.
It's amazing how music becomes a soundtrack for our life. And Aaron, I think that's a big theme in your book, that this music plays a big part in our life.
Right. Well, if I could just touch, I know we're running
Thanks,
out
Elizabeth.
Of time, just touch upon what she was saying in that the music does not just affect us audibly. It just doesn't go into our ear and then get received by our brain. It actually responds to our body. And there are many people in life, like Mel Tillis, who was horrible. He had such a stutter. But when he sang, he didn't stutter. And Jacqueline Dupre, towards the end of her life, her body just convulsed violently, and her sister would sing to her and would calm down. And then there's that precious story of that young boy who visited Mr. Rogers in the book. And he was almost a paraplegic, and he could not control any of his movements. And Fred started to sing with him and asked if he would sing with, back with him. By the end of the clip, if you watch it, of course I can't because I cry, his body has started to calm down. And it's amazing how things actually, how music actually responds. There's another story that I was listening to a Mozart concerto that you played this morning, actually, the D minor. And I had pulled up to a stop sign, and next to me was this lowrider car that had this gangster music. It was like boom, boom, boom. I mean, it was like my kidney stones were gone after he had left. And I thought to myself, what is he doing? It's crazy. And then I realized it was a student of mine at the conservatory. He was a classical violinist. And I tracked him down. I said, what, are you crazy? And he said, but it relaxes me. It physically relaxed me. And sometimes, I know you enjoy this, when you hear the Kochmar and those 32s are coming out, you really enjoy how it makes your body feel. And other people can't listen to the organ because it's too shrill. So we all have to get into tune with not how it makes us feel mentally or emotionally, but how it makes us feel physically.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about from your book when you were so tired. And I love that you're very candid. And I thought, is this an apology that Aaron's writing in this book? But you were just being very honest. And then what you would do is tell the story about the boy from Uzbekistan who wanted so badly to see the organ. And of course, you've already put in about 80 hours that week. And you decided to take the time and be with that boy. And you've received emails from him. It did change his life. And I think all of those stories and the ones that you've just shared are very special and very meaningful, and I think will resonate with folks, readers who pick up Does God Sing, A Musical Journey. What might you play for someone, and maybe you could demonstrate, for someone who might be having a hard time finding that inner calm, whether it be in the theater or at church or in the classroom? How would you, as a composer and musician, Aaron, sit down and maybe try to soothe their worry?
My goodness.
Talk about putting you on the spot.
I know. Well, there are certain ways. Just by kind of taking your chords around in different ways, 1 minute. I'm going to play one piece that I took just this from this chord, D flat with an A7th on top. That comes from Beethoven. But when you listen to it,
that is Aaron Robinson, and I'd like to thank him for joining us today. He's a composer and conductor and author of the new book, Does God Sing, A Musical Journey? Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer, Marcel Hutchins, answered your call. Matthew Schreiber ran the board, and we had help from Lindsay Maynard and the MPBN web team. I'm Suzanne Nance. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.